NFL training camp. We're live at Texans training camp here in West Virginia, right outside the Greenbrier Sports Performance Center. Field is empty. We're the only ones out here. There's one golf cart driver over there or whatever, a trailer driver over there. But it's empty right now. But within about an hour, players will be pouring out here, getting ready to stretch and have their last padded practice here at the Greenbrier on a beautiful overcast, about 60-degree day here in West Virginia. It's really, really nice. We're with you till 10 a.m. this morning. The McNairs are going to join us at around 9:30 or so. Callahan and McNair are going to join us. I interviewed Titus Howard yesterday. We're going to run that interview at 8 o'clock, I believe.
Okay.
It was a good conversation with Titus. Talked about his new leadership role. Talked a bunch of things with Texans. I hesitated to label him with a position as we're talking. I'm here with Texans offensive lineman.
Did you do it like that?
I didn't. That's what my brain did.
Fun with it. He seems like he, you know, a couple years ago he was kind of adamant that, hey, I'm a right tackle.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's that way anymore. I think he's fully embraced being a versatile player.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll run that at 8 o'clock today. Meanwhile, so we do have training camp battles going on right now across all 32 teams, obviously. And ESPN did a piece where they talk about the most compelling, the biggest storyline position group-wise for each of the 32 NFL teams. Each of their beat writers picks one out. Obviously, our beat writer here is DJ Bieniemy, who you sat next to at dinner last night.
Yeah, I talked to him for a while.
Was it delightful?
Oh, it was. He was a college sprinter. So he ran the 100 and the 200. So yeah. I didn't realize he does some kind of coaching of kids.
Looks like he could still run.
Yeah. So sprinting fascinates me. The amount of detail that goes into it.
For such a small period of time.
And we were talking about that, about how he said it can drive you crazy because every little thing matters so much. So you just start analyzing everything. Because, a hundredth of a second makes all the difference in the world. So every little thing you do in your training and during the day, you're always obsessed about every little thing. That's not the life for me.
No.
Yeah.
So do you agree with DJ that offensive tackle is the most compelling position battle going on?
He said specifically offensive tackle.
Do you want me to read what he says here?
It's pretty
quick. DJ says this: there's a battle in Houston that features both tackle spots and involves rookie Ariante Ursary, second-round pick out of Minnesota. He's battling Cam Robinson and Blake Fisher, who are the starting left and right tackles, respectively. Okay, so that's – I don't know if Blake is not the starting right tackle right now. Fisher was a 2024 second-round pick. Robinson was a notable free agent signing. Last season, quarterback C.J. Stroud was sacked 52 times, which was the second most in the league. The Texans are high on Ursary as they tried to trade up for him in the first round, according to league sources.
I wouldn't be surprised if they wrote this a week ago, going into camp, and it just came out. Because that would have been the competition headed into camp, where it looks like – I think has done some promising things out here, and I totally 100% see the potential for him. He still is only 2 weeks into his professional career, so he's not at the point where he's locking down Will Anderson or Daniil Hunter, but his good reps versus Daniil and Will look really good, and it looks like he's had reps where he looks like a polished pro, but he's still a rookie, so he's not there yet. But it's not as much that he's winning the competition as that Blake Fisher just hasn't showed up. And I think that's probably the biggest surprise. I was hoping to see an improved version. So far, we haven't. And maybe he's battling through something. Maybe he did in the offseason. Who knows? But right now, it's less of a competition than we thought it was going to be 2 weeks ago.
Well, this is how you know this was probably written right before training camp started. Yeah. There's zero mention of Titus Howard in here.
Yeah.
And Titus Howard, since Cam Robinson went down, first snap of the first practice here, he's been the right tackle the whole time.
But I think that too, is just more of an indication that that's still in their bag. I think the competition, whether or not Titus Howard plays right tackle, is completely dependent on how that position battle at offensive tackle goes and how good they feel about their offensive tackles.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think if Cam Robinson and Ariante Ursary are both healthy, I think that right now they would probably roll out with Cam Robinson and Ariante Ursary as your starting tackles and Titus Howard as a guard. But if either of those two guys are injured, I think, they'll probably slide Titus Howard back out. And so that, for me, Yes, offensive tackle is the most intriguing or one of the most intriguing or important ones, but I think the center and then the right guard position are equally important and equally competitive right now.
Are there? What's the most compelling one to you that's not related to the offensive line as far as position battles go?
Probably –
I think they're probably
linebacker.
Fourth. Yeah.
Well, linebacker, and part of it is that I don't think the starting linebacker is going to matter as much. I just want them to have the options that at times, hey, we want Aziz and EJ Speed out there. Or, hey, you know what? No, we want Christian Harris and Henry Toa-Toa, or we want Christian Harris and EJ Speed. I think their ability to mix and match at linebacker and to play a true base 4-3 with three linebackers on the field. Because especially against teams like the Ravens or other teams that like to put a lot of tight ends and fullbacks out on the field, I think they'd like more bulk out there at times. They had a lot of health and/or suspension issues last year at linebacker.
EJ Speed's gotten some run with the ones here in West Virginia. He's looked good.
Yeah, and I think that's where you don't necessarily have a. I think Aziz is a starting always going to be starting, but yeah. I think there's going to be other scenarios where, based on game plan or other factors, you're going to see a rotating cast of linebackers.
The position battles that I put in my
there's a drone.
Oh, is that a drone?
Field. Yeah.
Oh wow.
I think it was looking at us.
Yeah. Oh man. Okay, we're being watched.
Yeah.
All right. Mark Vandermeer showing up on the scene.
Hey, Vandy, what's up with that drone? And why is it watching us?
We're going to shoot it down.
That would be awesome.
Should bring your rifle?
Some kid comes out with like a suitcase, sets it up. And just
No. It'd be better. Some kid with like a raccoon skin cap, like true West Virginia.
Oh, yeah. Shoot it with a...
some local.
Shoot it with a long rifle.
Yep. Got overalls on and a coon skin cap. A rifle, like an Elmer Fudd rifle with the two shafts.
And he runs over and skins it in 27 seconds flat.
And then he's wearing a drone cap later. Mark Vandermeer in the house.
I should have explained to our listeners that was Mark Vandermeer.
That was Vandy. Vandy's bringing our headsets out so we can talk to the McNairs a little bit later on in the show. I did my video yesterday, my five thoughts from training camp, and obviously it was walkthrough yesterday, so there wasn't much to take away. So I had my three position battles that I'm most looking for. Linebacker was one of them.
Yeah.
You know, that back end, to me, the most interesting position battles aren't the ones for guys who are going to start, because I think the only ones where there's that is the offensive line right now. We know who the ones or the 1As are at each position. I'm more intrigued by the guys who are fighting for jobs right now, and especially given that Saturday is going to be those types of guys playing in that game against the Vikings. To me, running back, wide receiver, and linebacker are three positions where they're going to end up cutting guys who have either played a lot of football for other teams or have played a lot of football for the Texans.
I do feel that they've gotten to that point now where, all right, good. I feel you go through stretches sometimes where guys get cut from the Texans and then that's it for them in their career. I like it when I see guys get cut by the Texans and then they go on to
Picked
be starters
right back up.
Elsewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not because it was a dumb mistake by the Texans.
Nope.
That's a key too.
Because they have depth.
Yeah. Don't do a Brandon Brooks type of thing.
Where, no.
I like it when, hey, it's a guy there just wasn't enough room for this guy. He goes off and look, he's doing great somewhere else.
Yeah.
I think they have a lot of guys like that on the defensive side of the ball.
The example that you're talking about there where someone gets cut in training camp, like off of a bad Texans team, and then they wind up being good. Remember, Rasul Douglas was in Cully camp a few years ago.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden I'm watching these games with the Packers, and he's playing he's in the Bills and the Packers.
Yeah.
He's starting.
Yeah.
He's playing super important snaps. I'm like, that guy was getting no run in Texans camp a few years ago because they had to get Terrence Mitchell his snaps.
I'll tell you how crazy it is and how sometimes it's just a matter of finding the right fit and scheme. I mean, when Agumbawale was a young player, I don't think the coaching staff was all that sold on him.
He was here at the Greenbrier in 2017 with the Texans.
I'm not sure that Bill O'Brien really thought much of him. And it happens. I'm not like crushing Bill O'Brien for it. That's the way – some guys develop slower than others. Some guys just need to be in the right place.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so frustrating.
As far as this article goes, it has the 32, they're the most compelling position battles at all 32 NFL camps. The three teams that are screwed, the three teams whose most compelling battle is quarterback, starting quarterback. If you are in this article each year, and quarterback is your most compelling position battle, you ain't winning squat in that upcoming season. And those three teams are the Indianapolis Colts, who we just talked about in headlines, Anthony Richardson and Daniel Jones. Anthony Richardson's going to start tonight. Daniel Jones is going to start whenever they play in week two of the preseason. The other two teams, the Cleveland Browns, who now have five quarterbacks, in, well, six if you count Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, but five that are potential players or starters.
Shedeur Sanders is going to start in this game they play this weekend, and he's gotten hardly any snaps in training camp so far. And it's largely because there's injuries.
Yeah.
You know, Kenny Pickett is dealing with some
He's starting leg largely because there's injuries.
Shedeur is. Yeah. Shedeur is starting. Yeah, and Dylan Gabriel's got a hamstring. Kenny Pickett's got a hamstring. Joe Flacco, they're not playing in this game because he's 40.
Yeah.
So Shedeur Sanders is going to start. So you got Cleveland, and then the other one is New Orleans.
Cleveland is, you know, Cleveland's kind of worked themselves into the same position that Indianapolis has been in forever, where, hey, you built a hell of a roster. Looks great on paper, but we've got this small little detail of quarterback, and how do you handle it? You're just kind of screwed until you find one.
But then your your window starts to close,
right?
You know?
Well, especially when you've got. I mean, they've been. Deshaun takes a whole big chunk of cap space.
He does. Well, and now that you know, the question is: okay, Myles Garrett is an awesome player, but is this the team that should be paying him $40 million a year?
Yeah.
And I get that he you drafted him number one overall. You want him to retire as a Brown. He's going to be a Hall of Famer, this and that. For the sake of football, though, like think about how counterintuitive that is, that you've got a team that's got five quarterbacks in camp and is going to start a fifth-round pick in the first preseason game. And a few months ago, they just handed a guy who's pushing 30 $40 million a year for the next 4 years.
Yeah.
It's just what they're doing makes no sense, and I'm glad it's them and it's not us. So
no,
they're screwed. Yeah. New Orleans is the other one. New Orleans, with Derek Carr retiring. It's Tyler Shuck. It's Spencer Rattler. And, the Hayner kid from Fresno State.
I'm glad you mentioned Spencer Rattler because he shows up on the list of whenever people bring up the Shedeur Sanders having the record for career completion percentage in college.
Yeah.
I love people bring it up like it's somehow an indication that obviously he's an incredible quarterback. There is not the only quarterback of the top 10 guys for college completion percentage that made anything of himself in the NFL is Case Keenum.
Right.
And certainly it wasn't because he was, where was he, ninth on the completion percentage.
That had nothing to do with it.
It goes Shedeur Sanders, and then Colt Brennan, Colt McCoy, Kellen Moore, Graham Harrell, Grayson McCall, Will Rogers, Brandon Whedon, Case Keenum, and Chase Holbrook.
Yeah.
It's like, stop.
Household names.
Because I saw it pop up the other day, and I'm like, what the hell are you even doing?
Man.
You're citing a list that you clearly haven't even looked at.
Was it one of those tweets where someone just puts a graphic with the stat there and says, you know, like,
no, they look at it like it's a
elite.
They look at it like it's a mic drop. They're
really?
You think he's not good?
Oh,
huh? Well, how about this?
I got you.
Yeah, like it ends the conversation. No, you owned yourself with that tweet. It's just guess what? If you're a really good air raid quarterback,
those are all air raid quarterback. Those are all like most of them are either Mike Leach quarterbacks or branches off of the Mike Leach tree for sure. Does the drone that's flying over you guys have the logo of an AFC South team on it, perhaps? Bring it down, Seth. You have the listener's permission.
We know of the AFC South teams, I think the Jaguars would be the one most likely trying to revolutionize the sport.
100%.
And scouting using advanced warfare technology.
Well, by process of elimination.
He brought over a Ukrainian general to run his drone program.
Well, and I know I'm setting you up here for this one, but the other two cities are Indianapolis and Nashville.
Yeah, I know.
They're flying drones down here.
They might come in here with like
a
gyrocopter.
A bunch of hillbillies running down here, like Game of Thrones style, Battle of the Bastards.
They got a sketch artist up in the tree.
Yeah.
We're in full camo.
No, they're just standing on that interstate up there with huge binoculars looking down. That's what they're doing. Yeah. Did you all think that's a Minnesota Vikings drone trying to figure out how to game plan for the preseason against us? No, I don't.
Well, you practice what you do in the regular season.
Yeah.
People might say it's overkill to use a drone to spy on your opponent in the preseason, but if that's what you're going to do in the regular season.
That's right.
I used to think about this all the time. Over at NRG Stadium, there's that one hotel that has a good vantage point of the entire practice field.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, the one on the north side.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I just always thought, like, it would be so easy for anybody to just get a room up there and just sit there with some binoculars or a telephoto lens and film everything.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's to be done about it, because it's not like the Texans can ethically train a camera on all those rooms
on
in the
hotel.
Yeah, and just be sure.
Can you imagine? In an effort to be vigilant against would-be play stealers.
They've got this footage of,
Texans,
city councilmen having affairs in there and everything.
Texans get pinched for a felony.
Good side project, blackmailing politicians who are having affairs in those hotel
rooms.
That's
true. Yeah. I mean, you got to find new trickles of revenue these days, man. Yeah, for sure.
I was talking to a guy that's runs a pretty fancy hotel.
Yeah.
He's like... And I made some comment, and he was like, "Oh, discretion is my business," about I can't even remember what scandal it was. And he's like, "You just be amazed how many like really successful people all somehow don't realize that there are cameras everywhere."
Oh, no discretion, dude.
Cameras everywhere. Yeah. I feel like this guy could have gotten rich if he just decided one day to sell a bunch of footage to TMZ.
My God.
Yeah.
My God.
But he's good at his job, and he doesn't. Yeah. No names.
Oh.
I tried to put him to the test.
Yeah.
I tickled him. So I'm not gonna stop tickling you until you give me a name. Yeah.
Were you ticklish?
And then he said, "Oh, I got that on camera."
Oh man, we are not getting J.J. Watt for the season opener against the Rams. The CBS released their announced teams, their assignments.
Yeah.
For the first 3 weeks of the season, and we do not get J.J. Watt in any of the first three games for the Texans.
We do get Kevin Harlan.
We get Kevin Harlan for the opener, and for me, it's a dead heat right now between Kevin Harlan and J.J. Watt's teammate, if you will. I think Ian Eagle and Kevin Harlan are neck and neck. I think they're
your
really,
favorite, play-by-play guys.
Really, really good. I enjoy both of them. Yeah. So, but we get Kevin Harlan, Trent Green, and Melanie Collins on the sideline for the opener. Mm-hmm. I'll take that. I'll take Kevin Harlan in a heartbeat on the opener.
All right, boy, in L.A. with all that celebrities in attendance.
All that hoopla, yeah.
Matthew McConaughey.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell is just...
Why is he here?
What the hell is Matt Stafford doing?
The guy is drunk.
Yeah. Matthew McConaughey, clearly on ayahuasca.
we get the ABC team in week two because it's Monday Night Football. Week three, I blame this on the Jags. Spiro Dedis, Adam Archuleta, and Aditi Kinkwabala on the sidelines.
Yeah.
I like Aditi. She's good.
Cornell classmate of mine.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You went to school together?
I want to say she was a freshman when I was a senior.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay, so you went there. You were there at the same
time. Yeah, and we had a few. I think she was doing something with, like, sports media or something.
Okay.
So it was...
she looks good. That means she's in her late 40s.
She's,
she's doing well.
Yeah, she's doing, like, healthy.
Not,
I mean,
not
like,
trying to be creepy or anything. Yeah,
right, no. Oh, you're saying she doesn't... I wouldn't imagine... What you're saying is I would have never guessed she's about your age.
Yeah,
Seth.
Yeah. Well,
given
to
the
be
way
fair,
that you look,
I wouldn't. No. Yeah. To be fair, I wouldn't guess you were 50 either. I'm being serious. Yeah, I can pay you a compliment, and that's not creepy either. I get creepy if you want me to. And then the JJ's first. How about this? Two of JJ Watt's first three games, he's doing his brother's games.
Yeah,
that's a little weird.
That is a little weird. I wonder.
Do you think he'll be able to suppress his bias?
I don't think that they probably did that by design. The Steelers just flat out get a lot of the bigger broadcast teams.
Okay, well, they're the number two team, JJ and Ian Eagle are. And in the same week that the Texans play the Rams and get the third team, the next team down, Ian Eagle, J.J. Watt are on the Steelers at the Jets, which I think empirically are two worse teams. I think they're both worse than either the Texans or the Rams, but you got the storyline of Aaron Rodgers going against the Jets and Justin Fields going against the Steelers.
Oh, yeah.
And you got New York.
That part of it is huge.
That's very juicy.
There might be a little bit. I could see the producers kind of thinking like, well, maybe J.J. gets a little inside information from his brother. And
I can see that.
I feel like J.J. would be the exact opposite of like he's going to try real hard to be the consummate professional. A, doesn't want to mess with his brother, obviously. Yeah. But then B, just doesn't wants to do it on his own.
JJ.
The other day I was we were allowed to film the one-on-one pass rush drill. So I filmed the whole thing because I just wanted to be able to watch it later. I don't like to put out film of the one-on-one pass rush because as much as it pains me to say this, the deck is kind of stacked against the offensive line there, and sometimes people see a bad rep and they read too much into it. So I don't like to embarrass people, but I like to be able to watch it later. But I was like, oh, yeah, I'll just send this to JJ in case he's interested. And then I realized, like, oh, yeah, JJ can just call up the team and they'll get
Oh, he can get it. He can get all different angles of it or whatever. It was nice of you to do, though.
Yeah.
Good friend.
Then I got, I was like, oh, you'll probably, yeah, they would do it for JJ, but not for old Sethers.
Yeah.
Well, can't imagine the difference in the two.
Both prominent.
Can't imagine why they would might give
both
JJ
prominent
the,
former Texans whose jersey numbers began with 9.
Yes.
So JJ will be on he'll be on those games. Why does the offense? Why are they at a disadvantage in those drills?
Nothing's like in a normal game environment. Everything's compressed. Like there's traffic.
You got help.
There's traffic. Yeah. So I could come up with arguments why the offensive line actually has the advantage, but as I get further,
why would you ever do
away
that?
From it? Yeah, I know. I'm like, okay, I see where the O-line is a little. They're at a disadvantage here. And it also is. If a defensive lineman doesn't win a one-on-one pass rush, it doesn't really still look all that bad. It's like, it happens. Like, you get a sack once a game and you're awesome. 1 out of 40 rushes and you're awesome.
Yeah.
Offensive lineman gets beat and then you put it on social media. In their mind, minds are like, this is the worst guy who ever lived or played.
And it's the only play that'll be out there.
Yeah,
you know, they
so
put
I, don't,
the bad
I don't like screwing over like, offensive linemen unfairly.
I
like
got
that.
You. ESPN's been busy this week. Did a deal with WWE. Did a deal. The big deal with the NFL is what everybody's talking about. And Roger Goodell was actually in L.A. at the NFL Network's studios yesterday doing a lot of media talking about this new deal. So the deal is that that ESPN has acquired – the NFL Network, Red Zone, NFL Fantasy, and some other smaller properties from the NFL in exchange for a 10% stake in ESPN. Mm-hmm. The NFL now owns part of ESPN.
Does that mean they own – I don't want to get into the weeds on it. But it's owned – ESPN's owned by Disney.
Yes, 10% share
of
for
whatever
NFL.
ESPN.
Disney owns –
they don't own 10% of Disney.
No.
That'd be pretty cool.
But I would be here for the animated feature films on NFL players for sure. Pixar movies and whatnot. Roger Goodell was on yesterday on ESPN and actually brought up an idea that might be the ruination of me on Saturdays if they ever decide to do this. Mm-hmm.
One of the most popular elements of NFL programming has been Red Zone. It's a staple for NFL fans. What is that going to look like now under this new partnership?
Well, that'll actually stay the same. It'll continue to be produced right here in this building. It will be the NFL Red Zone. I don't think fans will see any difference to that. Obviously, in the context of that, though, ESPN purchased the Red Zone name, and they will be able to utilize that for other sports, college football and other things. And I think that could be an exciting thing for our fans also to see a Red Zone maybe in college football or other sports. That's something that they now own and have the ability to do that. But as far as Red Zone, NFL Red Zone, there won't be any changes for our fans.
Okay. So Red Zone is actually a brand that they – sounds like they own the intellectual property for that for that Red Zone.
I know, and I could,
calling it Red
I
Zone.
I feel reasonably good that there's no – there doesn't. There's. It's probably going to be just how Goodell said. I don't think they're going to take something that's already done well and say, no, we need to do it a different way.
I don't know if I trust ESPN,
But, I mean, the worst side of the sports leagues getting involved with outside businesses is sometimes, like, baseball now – like owns the baseball manufacturing facilities and stuff. And
oh, really?
And they seem to suck at it.
Okay.
I was like, hey, we're a sports league. What should we go into? Manufacturing of leather goods.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know. Ever since baseball took over ownership of the production process, it seems like pitchers are constantly complaining about how, like, these balls just, like, they're different every year.
Really?
And that, yeah.
Okay. That's not on my radar at all.
Hey, you and I are pretty good at sports radio, right?
Yeah.
You know what we should do? Buy a furniture manufacturing plant.
Create our own headphone manufacturing company.
Yeah.
We should manufacture our own set of headphones.
Yeah, with you and I and everything we know about.
P&P.
It'll be great.
Yeah, exactly.
What could be so complicated about manufacturing something that very few people in the world actually manufacture?
Two guys that couldn't coordinate a key exchange last night.
Yeah.
Have our own headphone company. College football Red Zone. I would be into that. I'm a big college football. Sit down on my couch on Saturday and don't move from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m.
I would like it for college football. I don't like it for
the
NFL as much. Yeah, but plus, just college football sucks. I mean, so it's the actual play on the field is so atrocious.
Okay, the quality of the play.
Yeah,
I got
it's
you.
Garbage.
Oh, so I would
love watching just the highlight reel type
got you.
Or red zone.
So
type
for
stuff.
You, college football is like last night. If at the steakhouse they came and they brought you a 24-ounce ribeye, but it was like 21 ounces of fat.
Yeah.
Surrounding like 3% of delicious succulent meat.
It's like watching single A baseball.
Red zone for college football would shave off all that fat.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That's a really good. That's a good analogy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. See, I got some of the charm in college football
totally,
is in the horrific.
I know. I totally understand the appeal. Yeah. I'm not saying college football like as a whole sucks. I'm saying the actual play on the field.
Yeah,
sucks.
Yeah.
I'm watching a bunch of guys that aren't that good at playing football, and then a few others that are really good at it, taking advantage of all the guys who aren't that good at playing.
Probably because I gamble on the games. Probably skews my view of how enjoyable they are.
Yeah, I'm not saying that you shouldn't watch college football or anything. I just don't. I don't enjoy the.
Well,
level
the quality
of
the play is not great.
Yeah.
You know, you're right about that. No question. The thing that people seem to be upset about with this whole NFL.
Yeah.
ESPN thing is that there is people have a glitch, and I think it's mostly people I've seen who have glitches about a lot of things journalistically these days.
Yeah.
Any news you get now on the NFL through ESPN, take it all with a grain of salt. And I'm like, I've already been doing that. It's not like the ESPN and the NFL haven't been in a multi-billion dollar partnership for decades now.
Adam Schefter is not a journalist.
He's
a paid stooge.
You mean we should look at it through that filter more than we already do?
Right, yeah.
So, all right. So
I know that was like back when Deadspin was still Deadspin had a lot of flaws and faults, but the cool thing about Deadspin was that they were totally unattached to anybody.
Yeah.
And that you got some actual stories that I don't think would have broken otherwise.
Yep.
I remember that was one of my first, I think my first week in radio. I kind of tried to ask the guy in the NFL Network with the ears. What's his name?
Oh, Andrew Siciliano.
Andrew Siciliano.
I know this story.
Because he's a Syracuse nerd, too, you know?
Yeah.
And I basically just asked, I tried to ask some question about, like, hey, you know, with the way things are where teams like, you know, the NFL Network, ESPN has an interest in the NFL. They're a partner of the NFL. And this was when I think all the Sandusky stuff was going on. And I said, is there a lot of value in websites like Deadspin or what have you? Because they don't necessarily have the same conflicts of interest.
Mm-hmm.
And Siciliano was such a little bitch about it. He was like, he was just appalled that I would suggest that there was any kind of conflict of interest. And
His tone? Was it how, like, what made him a bitch?
He kind of was dismissive of Deadspin at that time. And then Mike asked a question, and Siciliano said, now that's a good question.
Oh, he propped up his fellow QCian right there.
Yeah,
because I think Siciliano's a Syracuse.
So what happens with a lot of Syracuse guys, not all of them. So, like, Meltzer and Gallant are cool as hell. Sam Warren's out here. He's cool as hell.
He's a Syracuse guy,
Yeah, but some of them, they're those guys that are a little – they feel a little they've got like an inferiority complex because they want to believe that they're like, I'm a journalist and I have integrity and everything. And yet, meanwhile, like they're covering sports.
Yeah.
And they feel a little ashamed of themselves because of it. That's my take on it.
Yeah.
So when you kind of just address – when you address the elephant in the room, they get very offended. I said, because I made this claim to another writer once, and I didn't think it was a big deal.
Yeah.
I was like, I was talking about teams that put out really nice spreads in the press box.
Yeah.
And I was like,
Texans are one of
and
them.
And I said, hey, you know, like, I think it's a smart business move because it's like all those other little things in life. It's like, man, what the journalists see and what the writers see tends to have an effect on their perception of the organization. So when you're feeding the journalists really well, you know, it's like it probably has a little bit of a subconscious glow up.
No question.
So I said this to this writer, and he could not have been more offended.
Oh, you basically said that he's for sale. He's a whore.
That I suggest that would have any effect at all on his opinion. And in that moment, I knew, like, oh, it totally affects
totally,
his opinion.
Thou doth protest a
little
too much.
Whether he consciously realizes it or not.
Yeah, man. When I'm watching the offensive line out here, do I think of the cake pops in the press box? Maybe.
I know that my mood is a little better.
Yeah, maybe.
Because I'm my carbohydrate reserves are all topped off. Yeah.
I mean, this offensive line is very mediocre, and yet ice cream sandwiches.
It's like, you know, CJ's had three concussions in the last 4 weeks because the offensive line is so bad.
Yeah.
But I don't want to risk these ice cream sandwiches that I'm getting fed. I'm just going to be quiet about
it. Yeah, this run game is in first gear this entire practice. Carving station.
So all that to tell you that, I feel like that Pandora's box has already been opened.
Yes.
I don't trust any of the network, ourselves included. You know, like anybody that's got a business tie to anything.
Yeah,
you got to take everything with a grain of salt.
Okay, now with that said, let's put you to the test. Hey, P&P, this is a text message. Is there anything you can say about the offense that looks absolutely better or more crisp than this time last year?
Okay, and this sounds underwhelming, but I think
cake
it's very,
pops.
Very important.
It's, carving station.
You know what?
Ice cream sandwiches.
Usually they do have mineral water out here.
That's true.
And for the media. Oh,
light them up, Seth.
As of today, we have
tell
none.
Them how much it sucks out here. Where's our water?
So I'm going to tell you, no, there's nothing that looks better.
No, seriously.
Seriously now, my friends.
Yeah.
The pre-snap operation. So last year, one of the biggest complaints, and something that D'Amico has addressed in some of his press conferences this year, was just, hey, getting in and out of the huddle and up to the line of scrimmage with time to operate, those kinds of things last year were a struggle, and it was really frustrating at times. We all got way too accustomed to watching the play clock and being like, "Are we okay, guys? All right, there's 4 seconds on the play clock. Come on, let's get going.
Yep.
That's been a lot better. This is a little thing, but I think high school football coaches will appreciate this. When guys break the huddle and the offensive line basically sprints up to the line and gets set, that's the little stuff that you have to have in order to have everything else run in order. That looks better. They look like a more professional organization in that regard.
Yeah.
And then because CJ has to process more behind the line of scrimmage, he really needs that 20 seconds of play clock at the line of scrimmage sometimes. And so far, so good with that. And with all the, you know, when new offensive coordinators are in or there's a lot of new players, a lot of times that's what holds practices up at training camp. You'll have just some, you know, if you're at a training camp and they're continually, you continually hear the head coach blow a whistle and say, start the period over.
Yeah.
That you haven't seen any of that. So that, I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but it is progress over what we saw last year. And it is really integral to the way they want to operate with CJ this year.
Yeah. Cole Popovich has been kind of like a hard ass this year on the offensive line, in a good way.
Yeah.
Seen a lot of push-ups by offensive linemen.
The punitive push-ups.
They were talking last night at dinner, some of the folks at our table, that I guess he's had them like at times, like when you make a mistake, you got to go run a hill.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. So
that's always tricky because a lot of, you know, there's a debate about that, about using exercise as punishment.
Yeah.
Because then in your minds, you're kind of like, you know,
wearing it down.
Well, no. You're making exercise a bad thing. And it's kind of like, okay, we probably shouldn't. You know, you want guys who actually want to work out. I think you need to frame it this way. And this is how I always felt about like taking a lap. It's not like it's hard to take a lap because they don't make you sprint it or do it in a time or anything. But it's A, little bit of embarrassment because you've been ostracized for a small amount of time.
Yeah.
And B, it's kind of time to think about what you've done. That you're like, all right, yeah, okay. You're thinking about the fact that you jumped off sides as you're taking that lap.
Would you rather do a ton of push-ups or would you rather do some sort of cardio punishment?
If I were a coach, I like the cardio punishment because of the ostracizing effect.
Yeah, they have to run far away.
You're off by yourself.
By themselves.
And it's like, I don't know. There's something about that. It's not – the exercise itself is never all that. If anything –
the embarrassment of isolation.
Yeah, running a lap is – it's kind of a break in some ways. Like,
yeah.
Would you rather run 6 football plays or run a lap or jog a lap?
Because no one's sitting there with a stopwatch timing you or anything.
Right. It's more – you're like, I'm wearing the dunce cap. Yep, that's me. And that's a good, a little negative, it's all right.
Reinforcement.
You're going to do it a little bit. Yeah.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We're live out here at the Greenbrier, right outside the Sports Performance Center at the 20-yard line here at the practice field. We'll get Texans padded practice out here a little later on this morning. Nobody out here yet other than some of the folks from the training staff and whatnot. Players in that big white tent eating breakfast. They'll be out here shortly. All right, coming up next, be glad that you're not living in this city and that this person is your owner. They stuck a mic in front of his face again yesterday. It's so good. I'm so glad this is their problem.
They stuck a mic.
We'll have that for you. My interview with Titus Howard yesterday, it was a good conversation. We'll have that for you at the top of the hour as well. Stay there.
Hey, real quick.
Yeah.
I feel bad about my rant about college football.
Yeah, you roasted college football pretty good.
In comparison to the NFL when it comes to the actual quality of the play on the field, it's just hard for me sometimes to watch. Like quarterback play in college football compared to quarterback play in the NFL.
Oh, geez.
It's just night and day, obviously. So it's different. Like,
quarterback play with starters in the NFL is night and day from backups in the NFL.
I felt genuinely bad about saying that it's a bunch of bad football players out there with a few good ones in college football, because it's obviously they're all really good. It's all just different levels. But the big thing, the one thing college football does way better than the NFL is the innovative stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where a lot of the good – Andy Reid, one of the things that's made him as good as long as he's been is because he's one of the guys that watches and borrows from college football. He'll bring college football coaches in to scout and ask them, hey, what would you be doing versus this? Because, like – NFL coaches kind of get in their own silo sometimes, and there's a little bit of, like, some of them, their egos are a little bit fluffed up, where in college and high school, they innovate a lot more. So, I didn't mean to say that, like, college football is trash. It's just when it comes to the actual level of play, obviously, there's a big difference.
Yeah, our friend Coach Lease was listening, former coach at Episcopal. He coached Jalen Waddle and Walker Little. He listens to the show all the time, and he was texting during that segment. He says, as a high school coach, he would watch college football solely for the just to see, like, different X's and O's and plays and formations that might work.
No, and it is. And high school, like, most of the innovation in football happens at the high school and college levels. And it's, and they are. And sometimes it's because, like, they don't, you know, you're at school, it doesn't have the same resources. In the NFL, everything, like, the talent level is relatively even from team to team.
Yes.
But in college, you're just...
You're forced to be creative.
How the hell am I going to beat Alabama?
You're forced to be creative. It's survival instinct.
And you can be more creative, too, because the punishment isn't as quick and swift and severe as if you sometimes you try something innovative in the NFL and it doesn't work out, you're getting destroyed.
You get
smacked around. I didn't mean to insult like an entire
genre of sport. It's all right.
I mean, I kind of it's just different, obviously.
Yeah, of course, of course. All right, speaking of innovators.
Yeah.
And you know what? And
he was an innovator. Jerry Jones?
I was about to say, you know what? I'm saying that sarcastically.
Because he won't shut up about how innovative he was 30 years ago.
What he was doing 30 years ago was innovative.
He loves reminding people that he can't be criticized for anything now because 30 years ago his team was really
good. The wishbone was innovative at one time.
He's really, you know, he's become as Al Davis.
Yeah.
He's become, because Al Davis was really innovative in the 70s, but then he just kind of stayed the same.
Yep.
And that's where Jerry Jones is now.
Here was Jerry Jones asked by Jane Slater. This is about a minute, about a minute and 15 back and forth with Jerry Jones and the media and talking. Jerry starts going into this wormhole about how he bought the Cowboys with a handshake and a smile back in the day. Eye contact and a handshake, Seth.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so here's Jerry Jones chopping it up with the media in Dallas. This obviously is all centered around Micah Parsons and trying to get a deal done or not with their standout defensive player.
It's my understanding nothing was put in writing. So how would you describe a deal getting, so to speak, done and then walked away from?
I bought the Dallas Cowboys with a handshake. Took about 30 seconds and gave the number, shook hands. The details we worked out later. As a matter of fact, one of the details involved a lot of money, and we had to flip a coin over that. But the fundamental, I'm buying, and you're going to sell it to me for that range, that's done. And those are done with eye contact and handshake.
So is there...
So just so you understand why I... the way that I communicate with people that I negotiate with. So but let's leave it at that. There is no question that in the case of a player contract, you have to have it in writing. All parties do. We have a contract in writing, yet we're still talking about renegotiating it. So much for that.
So what's the sticking point for you right now at this point?
Again, there are no points. There's points of varying degrees of influencing, not having something done, but nothing that I would say is out of the ordinary.
I didn't really understand what point he was getting to, other than that does he believe they have a contract and it's just quibbling over minor details now?
He
feels a little put out that there's quibbling over
the original
details?
Story was that Jerry said, we had an agreement. Me and Micah talked and we agreed. And they basically agreed about money and parameters, like generalities.
Without the agent being
involved. And Micah said, talk to my agent now.
Yeah.
And that's when Jerry shut everything down. I'm not talking to your agent.
This is the problem. It feels like a record producer saying, like, no, that I signed that. It feels like a Motown record producer.
This does.
Saying that, like, I had that 16-year-old kid sign a contract for 29 albums, and I own the rights to everything forever.
And if that were the case, Jerry's got Micah's Defensive Player of the Year trophy on his mantle.
Yeah.
Like those producers had gold records back in the day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I won this Defensive Player of the Year award.
Man, players got agents for a reason.
Yeah.
Like, you making a deal with Micah and feeling like you had something. And especially Micah, there's so many things about Micah Parsons that he feels like an innocent child in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know, like he's just kind of like a wide-eyed boyishness about him, and just like he just seems like an innocent kid. And that, no, man, you can't get up here and act like, well, Micah and I, the billionaire, sat with 23-year-old Micah Parsons, and I know he's not a kid, but, like, he's a player, he's not a businessman, and we came to an agreement, and now the agent's making things more complicated. No. Micah hires an agent specifically for situations like this.
Here's what's so weird. This is what's so weird about this, is that Jerry Jones is acting like Micah Parsons is the first player to ever have an agent. You've negotiated contracts with and for hundreds of players. You've been the owner of the team since the late 80s. You've been the general manager of the team since the late 80s. He's acting like Micah telling him to talk to his agent is some sort of novelty.
Right, and because, like, back in the day, he and the previous owner of the Cowboys spit into their hands and shook hands.
I'm guessing there was paperwork after that.
Well, he did. He said there was, you know, there was minor details, and they had to flip a coin and all that. But, yeah, like, all that aw shucks, and this is the problem, is that the NFL has become the giant that it is, partly because of Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's elements of this that it doesn't operate the way a guy might buy a horse back in 1873.
Yeah. That is one thing. You know, we're going to have the McNairs on a little later. I'm not going to ask them to talk about Jerry Jones, but the Texans operate the complete opposite way of the Cowboys.
Yeah.
Right? That's a factual statement. When it comes to these big contracts, Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, and now Micah Parsons, they drag their feet. They have to overspend. And in the case of Micah Parsons, they're alienating their best and most impactful player, most impactful defensive player. The flip side of that is Nick Caserio, who takes care of Derek Stingley Jr. a week into the time that he's eligible for an extension. Nico Collins, you don't see third-round wide receivers get extensions after 3 years. Nico Collins did. Now, that's turned out to be a very good team for a very good contract for the Texans, and I think for Nico, too, considering the injuries and everything else. I think when we're here next year, you know, I don't know if we'll be at the Greenbrier, but when we're at training camp next year, my guess is we will be talking about contracts that have been done for Will Anderson Jr. and C.J. Stroud. If that were the Cowboys, we would be talking about it happening at best a year from then, 2 years from now. So I am curious about what Cal and Hannah think about how Nick operates, you know, and getting these deals done so quickly and paying market value, maybe even a little above market at the time, just to get in early on
them. But he's also right. You're factoring in the inflation factor.
For sure.
Where think about, like, if you're operating in the real world in business, and if somebody told you, we know for sure there's going to be 10% inflation every year for the next 10 years, or we have a pretty good idea. Like, that's A, be nervous, but B, in the real world.
Yeah.
But B, that's the environment in the NFL is, for the most part, there's going to be salary cap expansion, like, at a pretty healthy degree. So you can get ahead of that, and you got to make decisions with that. With Jerry, this just goes to show you how out of touch Jerry is. It's a big deal that Jerry claims he didn't know the name of Micah Parsons' agent.
That's
because that means that Jerry thought he was going to be able to make a handshake deal with Micah Parsons, for one, and that B and two didn't realize that, man, Mulligetta is not a guy that's just going to go gently into the night because with a feel-good, you know, hey, my player made a handshake. Like, Mulligetta is a really, really good agent.
Yeah.
So it just showed, like, Jerry's so far behind the ball. Like, he's so far behind the times and the way the business is operated that it's – like, obviously, any Cowboys fan would tell you, yeah, he should have ceded control either to his son or made the director of personnel there.
Will McClay,
the GM, yep, a long time ago. That's not a revelation. It's just, this is another illustration of it.
I don't want it to ever end, honestly. You know, as a Texan fan and as somebody who gets entertained by – any Jerry Jones soundbite, I want him to live to be 100 managing this team.
And honestly, I don't think there's not really any evidence that it's not senility or anything. I mean, he's been this wacky for 30 years.
Yeah.
He couldn't make it work with Jimmy Johnson because Jimmy wanted was to be able to run his football team without all of this extra distraction and hoopla.
Yep.
And Jerry just couldn't – he couldn't stand to the side and let that happen.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like this is the same Jerry from 30 years ago. It's just in a different environment, and it's one which he's responsible for.
It's one of the great what-ifs in NFL history.
Yeah.
If Jerry had just stepped back and let Jimmy run things, how many Super Bowls would they have won?
Yeah, how many more? Like, right. Yeah,
they won three.
Yeah, I mean, Barry Switzer kind of cruise-controlled into another one.
Yeah.
But that is a good question. Yeah.
Right? I mean, because
agency was really just starting to
– Yeah.
I mean, you'd only had real free agency for a few years at that point.
Yeah, 93, I think, was when real free agency hit. So, yeah. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you as we head towards the top of the hour. We're live at the Greenbrier just outside the Sports Performance Center, hanging out on a cool, overcast West Virginia morning. Texans practicing in pads today. Up next, I had a chance to – talk with Texans right tackle, right guard, we'll just call him an offensive lineman, Titus Howard yesterday. Good conversation about Titus, changes in the O-line room, what's this season like, his leadership role. And he named one thing that he was jealous about when it came to Laremy Tunsil.
Oh, yeah.
So we've got that as well. We've got that for you coming up next. Hey.